What kind of year do you expect lies ahead? Coming up on today's Travel with Rick Steves, we'll remind you of a few time-tested traditions they do in Edinburgh for good luck to usher in the new year. We'll also open a bottle of proper French champagne the way they teach you to do it in France. And we'll get you ready to visit Vatican City during the busy Jubilee Year festivities. Let's have some fun to start the hour making a snowman. Building figures out of snow is one of the earlier forms of art and expression in our world. Humorist and illustrator Bob Eckstein spent years investigating the history of the snowman and all things related to it. It made him into what must be the world's leading snowman expert. His book, The Illustrated History of the Snowman, is where he shares the stories, photos, and illustrations that tell the tale of snow figures from Father Winter in wartime Europe to Frosty on TV screens around the world. Bob Eckstein joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us how to better appreciate one of our oldest and coldest friends, the snowman. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. I'm getting chills just thinking about talking about snowmen again.
Oh, man. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a celebrity who's crossed more international boundaries as universally as the snowman. Tell us about your obsession with, I think, what Europeans call snow puppets, right?
Yeah, but that's interesting that it is one of the most recognizable non-religious icons and symbols in the world. It really transforms it. All different countries. It is a popular activity in Japan, throughout Europe, and we even have a snowman made in the Sahara Desert. It is something everyone understands.
You know, in your book, you have a sort of a photo essay of snowmen around the world. You got a shot of 750 snowmen melting in Berlin to protest global warming. You've got a snowman in the window of a refrigerator. I think it was in Chicago, and a 60-foot tall snowman in China when somebody is placing a carrot on his nose from a crane. I mean, it's amazing. Around the world, you see this common character.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like the snowman is becoming the poster boy for global warming. The artwork that you reference was actually a friend that I visited again in New York City. That installation traveled from the Art Institute of Chicago to the Met, where you could see it now. For people who are interested, you could see that refrigerated snowman. And of course, there's the whole metaphor and symbolism there. But the snowman making, I mean, is it something that man is going to one day never be able to do?
Ooh,
and it is something we could say.
That's a horrible thought. That's a sad thought because it's part of our childhood. I can't imagine a childhood without making a snowman.
Never mind childhood. It is one of the few activities that we kind of share with our ancestors. When I did the book, I had a dream team of experts because I was going into the project thinking I wanted to write a mystery, but I didn't want it to be like crime. So it could have been like who made the first sandwich or who told the first joke. Luckily, I picked who made the first snowman. But once I did, I collected experts in different fields, including Nigel Spivey, one of the world's leading archaeologists, who discussed with me the plausibility of prehistoric man making snowmen.
From your studies, what's the first record of some kind of a snowman?
First documentation, I believe, is northern China, early 7th century, when scriptures gave permission for people worshiping to be allowed to make snow Buddhas. And they would not have included that if such a thing didn't occur. I have actual physical evidence dating back to the 13th century in the margins of an illuminated manuscript of a book of hours next to a solemn passage of the crucifixion of Christ in which a snowman is illustrated and is also insulting two religions at the same time because it's anti-Semitic.
But when you look at that snowman from, the 13th century, does it look like the kind of snowman a kid would crayon in his coloring book?
There's some similarities. It's clearly a snowman that's melting over a hot pot. And yes, it doesn't have the carrot. It doesn't have a top hat, which only came during the W.C. Fields years later. And we're still not sure whether it's W.C. Fields who stole the idea of that kind of image of a top hat or if it was the snowman. But yes, it's a snowman in this 13th century illuminated manuscript.
Now, you also have cases of other, like a snow festival in Brussels in the 1500s, where the lower class people actually made snow figures as part of the art of the people.
Yeah, well, at that time, in the medieval times, snowman making is not child's play. It was something that adults did as an activity. Not only did they make it as an activity, it was a form of entertainment where in the early evenings, couples would stroll through the town and see these snow scenes and would enjoy the creations made by other people.
It's fascinating to think that something that we just think of as Frosty the Snowman and stuff we see on TV or do in our backyard as we're kids, it does have that history. In fact, you mentioned even Michelangelo was talking about making a snowman.
He was commissioned to do one for a prince in Florence. The point is that Frosty actually hurt the art of snowman making because it made it seem as though it was for children, when in fact it's really for artists of all sorts. Famous artists have made snowmen, including people like one of our greatest American sculptors, Larkin Mead.
Bob Eckstein is the author of The Illustrated History of the Snowman. Bob's also written Footnotes from the Most Fascinating Museums and Footnotes from the World's Greatest Bookstores. He shares cartoons and writing tips on Substack at The Bob and co-hosts a podcast called The Cartoon Pad. His website is bobeckstein.com. Bob, you wrote in your book that perhaps the most important snowman ever made was a colossal snow sculpture of a half-naked woman known as the Resistance, and that was in Paris in 1870. Explain to me how that could be such an important snowman.
This snowman was made by troops that happened to be a collection of France's top artists, and they were collected together, and they were getting bored during a lull in the battle, and the snow came down, and being artists as they are, they can't help themselves but to express themselves. It's like free art supplies dropped at their footsteps. And what they did was they created a snow museum made up of sculptures. This one piece became such an identifiable piece, it became a rally cry for the war. People got so inspired by it, it was documented. There was an engraving of it. And people tried to repeat it later in more permanent forms like marble and stuff. But it all came from a snow woman.
Okay, and that was in the 1800s in France. We also have historic snowmen or snow people from the United States in the 1800s. Tell us an example of a historic snowman from 200 years ago.
Well, it's actually the massacre of 1690, one of America's most bloodiest events of early history, in which they were about to be attacked by French Indians and soldiers that had been marching through the snow from Montreal. And as they approached the Fort Schenectady gates that were frozen open from the blizzard, they were greeted by two snowmen instead of two guards who had went inside to join the party at the pub inside the town.
So what happened?
Not good. Not good. It's one of the bloodiest events in American history. And snowmen took a place in it. You know, it's another example of how sex and violence actually took place in the history of a snowman. And when I first started researching, I had no idea, but it had a lot of these crazy stories.
Hey, let's get into more modern times now and talk about advertising with the snowman and the snowman as a media star, as a movie star.
It started with advertising. Snowman was an easy pitch man in the 11th hour when you couldn't find a celebrity. The snowman could be used. And it actually was very popular with smoking and alcohol back in the 1920s and 30s.
Smoking
before becoming
and alcohol.
A movie star.
Okay, so the snowman is peddling booze and cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, he's always anywhere at the beginning of things. In other words, the first postcards often had snowmen. The first silent movies included snowmen. Some of the earliest photographs in the 1840s up in Scotland included a couple making a snowman. It seems like the snowman's always there at the advancement of technology.
I wonder why that is. It's just part of joy. I mean, how can you not be joyful?
It's a part of us. The snowman's a reflection of ourselves. It's like man's first selfie. And it's easy to let the snowman stand in for ourselves and represent ourselves, which is why it's popular sometimes in protests. Snowmen are made in place of a human who might be fearful of doing it himself. We take out the snowman, we make him take the fall.
If there's anything that ever made the snowman actually beloved, I would say it's the pop hit Frosty the Snowman.
It is in this country, not in England. In England, it's the Raymond Briggs special for the holidays, The Snowman, in which there's no dialogue and it's a snowman flying. That's beloved by the country. People don't know Frosty, I think, outside of the America. But in America, it all began with a short little animated thing and a Gene Autry song. He would later go on to write Peter Cottontail. I think he just thought that he was onto something there with these gimmick songs. And this was all based on a children's book. But I always contend that this is the downfall of snowman being dignified and graceful and being considered a serious art form.
Oh, so I get it. So that's just cheapening it.
I think
so. All right. Well, this is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been brightening up our holiday season with a talk with Bob Eckstein. His book is The Illustrated History of the Snowman. And Bob, I never thought I would be so pulled in to the story and the history of that snowman that's been a part of all of our lives. You have a lot of interesting little factoids in the book, and one of them that I think is just really thought-provoking, and I'm just going to read it and see if it'll give you a final word. It takes 10 million snowflakes to make a snowman.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most romantic things you could do. If you think about going on a date, make a snowman.
And you're putting 10 million snowflakes together.
No one's counting. We're not counting.
And something that you can decorate together, and one day it'll melt away, but it'll stay in your minds as a memory you've created together.
And
forever.
The point is, don't make it with our homemade objects. Make it for yourself. Don't get an inflatable snowman or a pre-made snowman. This is a tactile activity that we all can enjoy that we've kind of forgotten about.
Wow. Bob Eckstein, you are evangelical about the snowman. Thanks so much for your book, and happy holidays.
Grab your mittens, Rick. We're going to go make a snowman.
All right.
Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be. And the children say he could laugh and play. But we don't believe him anyway.
We'll hear why it's a big year ahead in Vatican City in just a minute. And we'll help you greet the new year with a bit of bubbly and a wee dram, too. Stay with us. It's Travel with Rick Steves.